Does Facebook know your race or your religion or your voting habits?
Cambridge Analytica offered voter disengagement services in the United States, and there are internal documents that I have seen that make reference to this tactic. My understanding was that this was targeted at African American voters.
That was Cambridge Analytica whistleblower Christopher Wiley testifying this week before the Senate Judiciary Committee on the tactics used in the lead-up to the 2016 election and how that company attempted to manipulate African Americans and other voters through digital advertising. I spoke with Bari Williams. She's a tech industry legal and operations executive and the former lead counsel for Facebook. And Leah Wright-Regur, a historian and assistant professor of public policy at the Harvard Kennedy School, who says that what we're seeing is an old tactic with a new and more dangerous technological twist.
Efforts to depress Black turnout are as old as apple pie, right? That ever since African Americans have had the right to vote, there have been attempts to stop them from voting. What's different here, though, and this is, I think, where the information warfare comes in, is that there are technological differences that change the landscape of how you can reach people, how you can depress turnout. And part of what's going on is that there is no transparency about how that works. The landscape of social media is politicized, and that's something that we have to talk about.
Bari, I'm curious to hear what you think on this, because a lot of the allegations that we're hearing is that, you know, there were Russian hackers who were trying to incite racial animus in the United States and, you know, whether or not that actually had an impact. But what we're talking about here is tactics that were employed to specifically discourage Black Americans from voting, correct?
That's exactly what it was. And to Leah's point is this is not a new tactic. Now you just have technology which enables it to be far more expansive and more effective and more covert, which is kind of a trifecta in a really bad way. So you have issues around bots, you have issues around false accounts. And in some of these instances with the larger social networks, because they are so large, you have billions of users, you're not going to be as diligent in terms of scoping out and weeding out those fake accounts or bots or anything of that sort. So it's really about preventative measures more so than it is about corrective.
But what exactly was happening here? What were Black voters seeing or not seeing on Facebook?
So let's say that you are a Black man and you typically tend to vote Democratic, but maybe you've been posting on certain pages saying that you're not really motivated in 2016. Based off of those interactions and understanding that you may not be motivated, understanding where you live and if that is a state that may be a turning point, we may want to target certain ads to you to depress the vote, to say, just stay home. Not necessarily we don't want you to vote for this person, but just stay home, period.
Was this sort of a more direct approach to say, okay, these districts have already been redrawn, which has obviously been a problem so far, and we're going to target Black Americans in those districts?
This is the part where data and transparency really matter, because we still don't have a clear enough picture of who exactly was targeted and how it worked with, say, voter suppression efforts or gerrymandered districts or areas like this. We know a little bit, for example, that Black men in Ohio, in certain areas of Ohio, were targeted. And these were Black men who had some issues with Hillary Clinton, but also who had been enthusiastic voters for Barack Obama. We know that Haitian Americans in Little Haiti in Miami were also targeted in these kind of niche campaigns. But part of the, you know, sophistication of some of these techniques is that they were dark. So we actually don't know who was targeted and how, although that is beginning to come out.
Bari, I'm curious also. You've noted that in part the lack of diversity within companies like Facebook, tech companies, is part of what contributes to this problem. Could you expand on that?
Yeah, I think that is a huge part of it. So you have issues of lack of board diversity. So you don't have anyone that is lobbying for the general population of users in a larger stance. So if you have lack of board diversity, you don't have anyone representing those views. Now, in the case of Facebook, they appointed Ken Chenault, I think, in February, which is great. But it also kind of gives me pause, because you had Deborah Lee appointed to the Twitter board. You had Linda Johnson Rice at Tesla. So there's kind of like people essentially throwing black directors at some of these tech companies because they know that they'll get heat if they don't. I think that that's very relevant. But more importantly is how you treat the employees that are already inside. If you are locking people out of the C-suite, locking people out of director level and above roles, they're not in the rooms where those decisions are being made. And so if you're relying upon majority folks to relay their concerns or messages, oftentimes they're not going to make it into that room. And I feel as if perhaps there had been greater diversity at a higher level, or maybe those voices would have been amplified, some of these things could have been stemmed before they really were huge issues to this point.
And so one of the interesting things about social media has been this idea that social media serves a democratizing function. But what we're actually learning is that without kind of some kind of regulation, without some kind of oversight, or without people that are actually invested in the communities that use these platforms, that these things can be, you know, weaponized to push back against democracy.
Yeah, democracy is not equitable. And I think Leah and I pretty much cover that. The problem is, if you're looking at this from a standpoint of ads, it's pay to play. So if I don't have any money, I can't amplify my voice. The other issue I would implore people to be critical of is you have these platforms now talking about using AI to detect hate speech and to take down certain content. And that's great in theory, except when you dig deeper and you try to understand what are the parameters as to how you define hate speech. Who's at the table when you're determining what is hate speech? Do they have the cultural competency, not just in America, but in all of the various countries in which these platforms operate, to say, this is hate speech in Cambodia, this is hate speech in Rwanda? If you don't have that cultural competency, how can you make those decisions?
And how are you defining the limits of discourse in many ways, right?
Exactly. And why do you think that that is appropriate? And so it's really going to be imperative for all of us to ask those hard questions and hold their feet to the fire.
Critical conversation for these very important times. Leah, Bari, thank you so much for being with me.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Bari Williams is a tech industry executive and former lead counsel for Facebook. And Leah Wright-Reger is a historian and assistant professor of public policy at the Harvard Kennedy School.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.